Okay, let me start, Harold. Thank you for this brief introduction. So I'm going to tell you some of the work we did. I did some review on religion, spirituality, and longevity, and also we did a pilot project on stress buffering in our clinic in Switzerland. Let me tell you some more about myself. I'm a medical doctor. I studied in Zurich. I did my clinical training in internal medicine and cardiology, basically. Then I switched over more and more to psychosomatic medicine. I'm a head of a psychosomatic department for about 10 years now. And we started to do some research in the area of religion and spirituality. Are dealing with stress and stress buffering, and it's a good exercise for me now. Okay, I hear that Danish people like very much their families, so I brought you a picture of part of my family, of my three boys. I'm having a lot of fun with them. And also I brought you a picture of our clinic in Langenthal. It's just beautiful there too, as it is here. And if you come to visit Switzerland, you are welcome to drink a coffee. I'm offering a coffee to everybody coming to visit us.
That's great.
Okay, there is evidence that there's a link between religion, spirituality, and health. There's growing evidence for that, and you have this beautiful handbook written by a man called Harold Koenig. And the second edition is on the way. So it shows a lot of studies showing this link between religion and health, not only in a positive way, also neutral in negative correlations. There is also evidence that religious involvement is associated with lower mortality, and there's a beautiful systematic review, a new one. It has been published in 2009 by two quite renowned departments. That's the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health in London. That's Andrew Steptoe and Linda Powell at Chicago. So I think it's a well-done review. It's not only a review, it's a quantitative review, also a meta-analysis. And you would like to show you some of the results they found. I think it's just a little bit state-of-the-art on the topic of religion, spirituality, and mortality. What you see, they were looking for studies doing prospective investigations. On religion and mortality, and they divided them into two groups. One is the healthy populations and one is the diseased population, and you see that they find here for healthy populations they find 69 studies according to their criteria, and for diseased populations they found 22 studies. You see here different criteria of the study populations. They also distinguish between different categories of religiosity. It's more organized activity, social supports, multidimensional aspects, and also between different types of mortality, all-cause mortality. Most of them assessed all-cause mortality, but also some specific like cancer mortality and cardiovascular mortality. And all in all, what did they found? They found that 27 of these studies here, or 16 in the meta-analysis, showed positive association. Okay, and you had here you have 5 with positive associations, or even only 2 in the meta-analysis. You have 39 with no significant effects on mortality, or 28 here in the meta-analysis, and so on, you see it here. 3 in the whole sample and 0 in the meta-analysis, showing that there was a harmful relationship. Okay. What I want to show you here is the this nice table showing studies on healthy populations. These 44 studies here, and you see there was an overall effect of 0.82 hazard ratio. That means mortality reduction of 18% in the healthy population, but they had 80% less mortality than in the religious group than in the non-religious group.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sure.
Because we're waiting. You know, when they have controlled for confounders like publication bias or something like this, because they're almost just positive results, and also adjustment of number of patients.
Yeah, they had a lot of non-significant, 39.
Yes, the number of patients and the effect sizes, so as a criterion for selection. Do you know it?
They had selection criteria, but they don't know them by heart now. I will have to show you in the study. But I think they were quite rigorous to select this study. There are more studies, we hear this in the morning, there are more studies on the topic. I think they were quite rigorous in choosing.
Selection bias in the meaning that the publishers are just publishing the positive results. They have, of course, some no significant results, it's true. But there might be a trend, because if you have heart for the topic, of course, you have the heart to publish only the good results.
Yeah. I can't answer this question. Who is knowing this review of Shida?
I. And there's a letter coming up from a group of Coyne from Pennsylvania and so on. They have two letters discussing.
They're discussing the review.
Did you see that?
No.
I don't know if it's published yet. No.
Not yet.
But I did see the draft of that. So yeah. I think it's.
And what are they saying?
The last word has not been said. No, I think it's an ongoing discussion.
Please try to write it.
What you see here is that male female population had a bigger benefit than male population. It's, I think it's quite typical. This is somehow known also for religion and spirituality. It's also known in the psychosocial field as a whole. Then what you see here is that organized religiosity as church attendance, for example, typically had more benefits or effects than non-organized activity, but here there were only four studies. And what you can see here is that cardiovascular mortality are the relevant part of mortality in this analysis. Second one, cancer mortality also here, and the respiratory disease, huge benefit. But I think this is easily explained by smoking, mainly. If you look at the deceased population, then you see a totally different picture here. You see that there is only 13 studies, and you see they have an overall effect of 2% mortality reduction. In this population, men benefit more than women, organized again more than non-organized, and cancer mortality. There was no significant benefits in these four cancer studies. So this gives us somehow a little bit an overall picture of the topic. I think this one is very interesting and. There needs, I think, quite a discussion why it is and what could be behind these results, and we had some discussion on that. And on the review itself, they say there are probably more mixed findings, you know. To be religious as a sick person can be beneficial if you take your treatments, but if being religious means that you just trust in God and don't use your medication and don't do the standard medical treatments, then this is more harm than benefit. So you could have these kind of effects. You could have also this kind of dynamic that if you get sick and start to deal with the religious, sick people tend to become more religious, and probably this dynamic is also behind these results too. But I think it should be nice to discuss this further. This is a nice study. We are going to hear more about it later. There's another Scandinavian study on different denominations. Eastern Orthodox had a much higher mortality than the Lutheran population in Finland. And this is, for me, a very fascinating study from Israel. They investigated 10,000 civil servants over a long period of 22 years. I will show you the result here. And you see that the one curve is really making a difference here. That's a group of the most orthodox people. They, beside the cardiovascular factors, they also assessed orthodoxy according to these categories here: non-believers, secular, traditional, orthodox, and most orthodox. The most orthodox, they really had a benefit of about a 20% reduction of mortality risk in coronary artery disease after 20 years. Controlled for all the known risk factors. I think what I find interesting is that especially this group, or the other didn't differ from the non-believers, but this group differed, had a real benefit. But I never... Okay, we can... There are different mechanisms possibly involved in this. There are lifestyle mechanisms here, or improved social support, better networks, improved coping behaviors, religious coping, more positive emotions, more optimistic attitude, better mental health, less psychological distress. And what I would like to look at now is stress buffering. Stress buffering is a concept saying that if you have the same stress, you have a different stress reaction on a different levels. How long do we have?
You've actually got 5 minutes, but I'm going to give another 5 minutes because of all this messing with the computer. So you've got 10 minutes total left.
I don't know whether you are familiar with this concept of cardiovascular reactivity. Probably not. It is it's basically the cardiovascular stress response to mental or social or physical stress. So how much is blood pressure going up if you stress you, for example, with a standard stress test? And this is a central concept in psychosomatic medicine. Typical measures are heart rate variability, blood pressure variability, and cardiac output, different measures of cardiac output. And it's somehow a psychophysiological risk factor for cardiovascular disease, hypertension, coronary artery disease. But it's a complex construct. I will go over this now. It's a complex construct having different levels of regulation in the stress system. And you can well imagine that religiosity, some could, for example, on this level, on the frontal limbic system, cognitions, emotions, influence how stress is perceived in persons. There's a beautiful study of Kevin Masters. He examined stress reactivity in two groups, in a group of older people and in a group of younger people. And this is a diastolic and systolic blood pressure reactivity on a stress test. And what you see here is that in young people it doesn't differ between the intrinsic religious and the extrinsic religious. But in older people, it differs a lot between the extrinsic and the intrinsic. The extrinsic have a much higher reactivity here on the same stress test as the intrinsic group. So somehow they stay young in the way they react to this stress test. It's a similar, it's a nice study from Italy. I have to quit this too. Let's present some of the pilot project we did in our clinic in Switzerland. It was a master thesis of two psychologians. We examined 40 patients with mild to severe depression, assessed medical history, medication, different psychological measures, blood pressure, symptom checklist showing a burden psychological symptoms, centrality, the religiosity scale, and ARCO. And we did stress testing with these participants. That's the religiosity measure. It's a five-dimensional measure, only 10 questions on each of these two dimensions. This was the... You see how it works. This is the patient, and these are the two psychologians. This was the stress protocol. You see, we did we involved the patient with a baseline assessment, Stroop testing, recovery, Stroop testing and recovery. And you see it worked. This is heart rate, baseline going up, recovery going up, and recovery again. So this is Kohler-Stroop. Probably most of you know about Kohler-Stroop. You have to, not to say the word, but you say the color. And this is a mental stress. You can try it for yourself. Okay, these were some sample characteristics. I go over this. You see it's quite nicely distributed here, all the different measures. There's in between correlations between psychological measures, but also between the religious measures. This is centrality, general religiosity, and religious coping. Then here you see the physiological measures, systolic blood pressure here, also quite nicely distributed, diastolic blood pressure. This is blood pressure reactivity during the stress protocol. You see it goes up here from 120 up to 130, back again, up again. So we had a nice effect also on blood pressure. And these were the correlations here. We looked for how religiosity is correlating with the baseline measures here, Stroop measures, and here this is the main point with the reactivity. This is the difference between baseline and Stroop 1, and you see that religiosity is quite highly associated with blood pressure, with systolic blood pressure reactivity here, also with diastolic blood pressure. For systolic it's minus 0.46, and here it's minus 0.369, and it's negatively correlated. That means as higher religiosity is lower reactivity. We also did a regression analysis because we wanted to check about confounders, sex, age, depression. You were wondering about what depression is doing in this association. And finally, you have religiosity here. And you see that age, sex, and depression only explained about 10% of the variants, but religiosity explained about 20% of the variants. And we were quite surprised about that. We didn't expect this in this quite small group of 40 patients. This is heart rate variability. We try to assess, or we assess also heart rate variability, but what you see here, there's not a nice distribution. So we didn't have good results on heart rate variability. I think we have to improve our technique to assess it in a better way. You see this also here. We have a nice stress protocol here for heart rate, but not a very, very nice protocol here for heart rate variability. And also the correlations were weak, at least. We had some correlations. They also went in the right direction, but the findings were very mixed. So that's my conclusion here. There is evidence for a stress-buffering effect of religiosity on cardiovascular reactivity in depressed patients. This was our group. Clearly for blood pressure reactivity, possibly also for heart rate and heart rate variability. We don't know exactly about medication, what medication does in the whole. We assessed it, but it's quite a difficult topic to know what how they interact with the reactivity. And for sure it needs further analysis and testing of this hypothesis. Thank you.
Okay, very good. We have 5 minutes. 5 minutes for questions. So any questions or clarifications until 5 after?
Okay.
Any questions? Yeah.
The Jewish results, it's not quite surprising because the Orthodox, the ultra-Orthodox, are not really hard-working men. So their stress situation is completely different as compared to their women. It would be interesting to see these results, of course. So, of course, this is a bias in the population selection. And so the results are not that they are orthodox, because it's much more the effect is on doing, they have real less stress because of the religious commands.
They're not allowed to be soldiers in the Israeli army, and for that reason, several people choose to become orthodox and follow the schools, not to be enrolled in the army.
I showed you this study because I think it's an amazing study, I thought the most orthodox would have the biggest stress, you know. If I go to Jerusalem and see how they are running around, maybe at home it's not the same at home. I thought they would have more stress than the others. But it didn't have. This group was defined by going to synagogue regularly, doing rituals at home regularly, and sending children to a religious school. I think you can discuss this. You know, about women, we have seen that men have even less benefit on mortality than women. So if you would examine women, I'm not sure whether they would have less benefit.
Yeah. Yes, just a question. You said that the religiosity took 20% of the variants, but how much of the variants were you able to determine in the models? How much of the variants did you find in total?
With the measures we had about, I think, I don't know whether I understand your question properly.
Yes, when you threw the models in your regression, you put on several variables.
And all in all, we had, I think, around 50% or something.
50%. Okay, and 20 of those were religion.
Pardon?
20% of those.
It was explained by...
Yes. Thank you.